Oh, yeah, it feels good to be back on a Tuesday edition of the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch, our producer, back in the studio. I am still in quarantine broadcasting live from my studio apartment on the northeast side of Fort Wayne. Hey, we've got a big show coming up for you today. We've got some great guests lined up, including Kevin Bowen from Indianapolis, from our friends at The Fan. He'll be joining us coming up about 30 minutes from now, talking Colts football and so much to talk about with the Colts. We'll get to that not only in just a couple of minutes, but also coming up in 30 minutes with Kevin Bowen. In hour number two, we are going to be joined by Zach Osterman from the Indy Star. The Indiana Hoosiers are off to a good start under Mike Woodson. They're back at it tonight in a game they should win very handily, and we'll talk about what we've seen and observed so far in this Mike Woodson era of Indiana basketball with Zach Osterman at 5:20. And then Dylan Sin from the Journal-Gazette joins us at 5:35. College football playoffs. Boy, this has gotten kind of interesting, hasn't it? Now you've got Ohio State and Michigan playing each other, probably only room for one of them if they even get into the college football playoff. And then what happens with Notre Dame? What happens with Cincinnati? Well, we're going to find out a lot of that coming up tonight. But Dylan Sin, let's just say that his AP ballot gets some scrutiny every week. And so we're going to talk to Dylan about what he thinks as far as who should be in the college football playoff coming up at 5:35. It is so good to be back in the chair. Obviously, for those of you that have followed the show and listened to the show on a regular basis, you know that I have had some time off and away from the studio, and I have had my own little struggles over the last week or so dealing with COVID. Yes, I am vaccinated. I don't mind saying that it is not an immunization. It is a vaccination, and I had my vaccination in the spring, so I guess this would be considered a breakthrough case. I was diagnosed a week ago Monday, and by really Tuesday night, things started to get a little difficult. I mean, it was more or less for me an issue of breathing. Fortunately, it wasn't COVID pneumonia. It was just inflammation that was causing things a little difficult to get deep breaths. It was challenging to sleep. In fact, over a six-day period, I added up that I got 14 total hours of actual sleep, and so I was wearing down. I was weak, and I tried to stay on, do the show every day. I felt a commitment to the audience. I felt a passion for the sports that were happening, but it got to be a little too much. And by the end of the week, I was glad that Justin was able to jump in on Friday and fill in for me. I tried to do the Mastodons game, which I guess I did do, but things kind of took a turn after the Mastodons game, and I had a really difficult night, Friday night into Saturday morning. Eventually went and got checked out and was able to get some medication that helped me and some prescription drugs that helped to treat some of the symptoms I was going through. And so, it is a scary situation, especially when you are one of the high risk type individuals that they talk about, those with underlying conditions, those with health risk associated with what COVID can affect. And so it was a little bit of a scary situation, to be sure. And I just want to tell anybody that, you know, big throat punch to you if you refer to COVID as nothing more than a cold, because that's certainly not true. This was totally different than any kind of cold I've ever had. In fact, I had about 4 or 5 days of a cold before I ended up being diagnosed with COVID. We don't know if that was COVID or not, because during the time I had the cold, I tested negative for COVID. And then all of a sudden, the symptoms switched, and I noticed the first thing was I couldn't smell. And of course, everybody tells you if you can't smell or taste, that's one of the sure telltale signs that you may have COVID. And so I took a test as soon as I couldn't smell, and immediately that test came back positive. So That's how it all started for me. And by Thursday, I was able to get the infusion. And if you don't know what that is, if you ever get COVID, this is something you're going to want to look up. If you have any kind of mild or even moderate symptoms, before it gets any worse, get this infusion. And you can get the information for it. I know I went to the Parkview Infusion Clinic. And it is a basically a big, juicy, fat cocktail of antibodies that they stuff into your body to try to continue to fight the COVID more aggressively. And I am sure that that probably helped to shorten the duration that I dealt with COVID. But no, it was not an easy week. But I'm glad to be back. And what I am considering at this point to be recovered from COVID. You know, it's one of those things when you know you've got the underlying conditions, you always kind of fear what the unknown could be. If you were able to get it, I got it. I got through it. It was a very hectic week and a stressful week, but I'm glad to be back here on the radio every day, 4 to 6. And this is strange. And I had to jump on today. I mean, I just felt like I had to be on today because we're off tomorrow for the holiday. We're off Thursday for Thanksgiving. Friday, I am going to be down in Florida because I have cleared all protocols now. So I will be able to fly down to Florida for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we will have Mastodons basketball 3 straight days down in Fort Myers. So Mastodons will take on Southeastern Louisiana on Friday, Western Michigan on Saturday, and they'll finish up the 3 games in 3 days against Florida Gulf Coast. Yes, you remember them as Dunk City a few years back. They will be playing on Sunday. And Friday and Sunday will be right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Saturday's game will be available by the special Mastodons stream. But I had to get at least a show in this week because there is so much happening. And I wasn't allowed to be a guest on yesterday's show. Caleb, man, I was just juiced, ready to jump in and just throw in my 2 cents yesterday. But I know you advised me, and you probably advised me well, to get some extra rest. Because Sunday night, I ended up sleeping at my days have all gotten confusing too. Sunday night, I ended up sleeping 7 hours, which was the first night I actually got sleep. And then last night, I slept 11 and a half hours, which it's just insane. That's like an entire week's worth of sleep for me normally. I got 11 and a half hours of sleep and woke up, felt great today. And I went and took a COVID test this afternoon, and it's negative. So it's time to put this baby behind me. And I still have a few of the lingering symptoms, a little out of breath at times, a little winded, still dealing with that. But and still some fatigue because my body's been through a little bit of a fight over the last week. But other than that, it's great to be back. It's great to feel like I'm on the road to health. And I got something to look forward to. I get to go down to Florida for 3 or 4 days. So I guess the reward for beating COVID for me, Caleb, is that I get to go spend it in 75, 80 degree weather in Florida. That's not a bad reward.
No, but you're still going to be working. So it's not a vacation.
Well, it's not a vacation, but you know, if you're going to be somewhere to work, Caleb, isn't it better to be working in 75, 80 degrees than it is to be working in 30 degrees or whatever we've got? Actually, today has turned out to be a pretty nice day. I got a chance to go out and actually walk a little bit, and it's turned out to be a pretty delightful day, a pretty fall day, I guess. But yeah, it's a pretty fall day at 35, 40 degrees, but it's I think it's like 75 right now in Fort Myers, and it's supposed to be, I think, upper 70s. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that little trip. But man, did I miss some sports. What a weekend we had. How about those Colts? Gosh, I was pumped up. The Colts came out. First of all, how many times do I have to say that the Colts are masters at creating a game plan and putting together play calling for the scripted plays on the initial drives of games? And I don't have the stats to back it up. I can't sit there and say, oh, their average yards per play and everything is better. It just seems like their drives, the first drive or two of the game, is well orchestrated. The variety of play calling is so much more advanced than maybe what we see later in games. But I just thought they came out with a game plan, executed it. They came out and just punched Buffalo in the mouth, did exactly what they needed to do, took control of the game and took it away from the home crowd in Buffalo. Miserable weather, which made it even more difficult on the Bills to try to come back from multiple scores down, because Josh Allen trying to throw in a 15 to 20 mile per hour crosswind. There were a couple of balls that I think he threw that ended up taking left curves and just disappearing, not even close to a receiver. But the Colts did exactly what they have told us they wanted to be. And that's why I think this is almost a signature win for Frank Reich and Chris Ballard, because this is the team they supposedly put together, the team that is going to run the football, establish the run with a big offensive line. They're going to win in the trenches. They're going to dominate the line of scrimmage. They're going to run. Then they're going to play off the run, take pressure off the quarterback. Everything that they've said that this team would be built on is exactly what we saw, and they executed it to perfection on Sunday against the Bills and got that 41-15 win. Jonathan Taylor has made a name for himself now nationally as a true star in the NFL. 185 yards rushing. They gave it to him 32 times. He ended up getting another 19 yards in pass reception, so a 204-yard day in total yards for Jonathan Taylor. That took all the pressure off Carson Wentz, especially in those conditions. The offensive line was not only really good, but they were even good after Quentin Nelson got hurt and re-aggravated that ankle injury and had to leave the game. And the Colts still were successful in controlling the football, keeping it out of the hands of Buffalo. I thought from start to finish, this was a total complete game for the Colts, offensively, defensively. And you've got to give credit, too, to that defense, because the safeties, which was our big question mark going into this game, at least it was the question mark in my mind, would the safeties be able to handle the responsibility against a guy that's got the strong arm to throw it downfield and to test you vertically? And, I've been critical of Matt Eberflus plenty of times, but I've got to say the Colts' defensive game plan was right on par. And with backup safeties, they both played well. Of course, Odom came up with the interception. Sendejo, I thought, had a couple of big plays coming up and attacking not only on the pass, but he came up and supported in the run. And I thought just through the roster, complete special teams, offense, defense, the Colts just had an absolute signature game. And that team that we saw on Sunday, I mean, you have the right to say they are a contender. Now, are they a contender for a Super Bowl, an AFC championship? I'd say yes. I mean, we already know they can compete with the Rams. We saw them play them pretty even and probably should have won the game when they played the Rams back at Lucas Oil Stadium. We're going to see what they can do against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming up this Sunday. If they can get a win over the Buccaneers, okay, then they've got they can show that they can beat or compete with NFC's teams that are among the best in that conference. And, you know, now they've got a game against Baltimore that slipped away, but they outplayed Baltimore for about three quarters of that football game. They've got a win on the road at Buffalo. And, you know, Tennessee still doesn't scare me. And you just have to see at what point, Tennessee gets Derrick Henry back. But overall, I thought Sunday, Caleb, was absolutely almost a perfect Colts performance.
Great performance on Sunday. I mean, they went with the running game early and often, and it worked. But I guess the question is, can they do this now consistently? Is this a new team, or was this a one-off moving forward?
I'll tell you what it is. Here, this is kind of my philosophy, and I'm starting to stick to this, and I'll see how it goes from here. I think we have found a little bit of an advantage in what's going on behind the scenes in Indianapolis with Hard Knocks. I started to think about this Sunday, and I tweeted it, that Hard Knocks has got cameras everywhere. In other words, anything a Colts player does or that they are subjected to, or if they are part of the problem rather than part of the solution, they are going to get exposed. I do believe, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, I do believe that having those cameras right on top of every play, every practice, everything that's happening, that it will make players more accountable, because no player wants to be signaled out in Hard Knocks as a player that's making mistakes, having a problem, or could have been part of a loss. I mean, part of a bad performance. And so it makes every player maybe be held to a higher standard, a higher level of accountability, because the Colts came out and to a man, everybody that I saw play on Sunday did their job and did it well. And I wonder if that could be a little bit of a side effect of Hard Knocks having their cameras right there on top of the Colts.
I think you see the cameras, they're there, you tune them out pretty quickly. I don't think the cameras are having an impact on how guys are playing. I just think guys are fighting and battling for jobs just like any other week.
You don't think that the Colts players all know that they're under the spotlight right now? I mean, you go about your business probably ignoring the cameras, but I don't know how you can't acknowledge that what you're doing right now in this season, in the middle of the season, that what you're doing is being scrutinized every week on a television show for the whole world to see. I think an ego of a professional player is going to make them respond to that. I think it's hard to say you can completely ignore it. I mean, you go into the cafeteria and there's going to be cameras. You go into a meeting with Frank Reich, there's going to be cameras. You go to the practice, there's cameras waiting for you. I mean, if you watch that game, I saw a number of scenes when they show Frank Reich on the sideline where there's a guy right next to him holding some kind of electronic equipment, making sure all the audio levels of all the Colts coaches and everything else is being recorded. I think it's hard to just ignore that those cameras are there. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862, give us your thoughts on what you think about the Colts, their big win on Sunday. Now it gets tougher. They've got Tampa Bay coming in. And, of course, I think this is a perfect scenario for the Colts to get Tampa Bay on a week when they had a Monday night game and they had an opponent that really, boy, we'll get to that. That was just ugly last night by Daniel Jones. I mean, that made things easy for Tampa Bay. I don't know what color uniform Daniel Jones thought his team was wearing last night, but he certainly threw it to the wrong one a number of times. But they made it easy for Tampa Bay last night. So getting a win like that, that you kind of just cruise through on a Monday and all, it's like, man, this might be perfect for the Colts to come out and actually be a tough opponent following up an easy win for Tampa Bay. I like the setup coming up Sunday for the Colts and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. About 10 minutes away from Kevin Bowen from 97.5, the Fan down in Indianapolis. KB is going to join us to talk Indianapolis Colts. Of course, what a weekend it was for college basketball. Didn't start so well on Friday. I had the call of Minnesota and Purdue Fort Wayne, and the Mastodons jumped out and took a 9-0 lead and were on fire early. Led 15-5. They looked terrific, and then something happened in the second half. It just kind of fell apart. Once it got away from them, it got away in a big way. Mastodons will look to bounce back this week down in Fort Myers. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, playing in a little round robin down there. In fact, Fort Myers is the place to be for college basketball right now. I was watching that Ohio State game last night, and that Ohio State game was taking place down in Fort Myers. They've got a tournament playing right now that ends on Wednesday. And then Thursday, of course, Thanksgiving. And then the Dons have their little go-round, and they'll play southeastern Louisiana, western Michigan, and Florida Gulf Coast on Friday, Saturday, Sunday down in Fort Myers. But how about the Purdue Boilermakers? You know, talked last week about whether Purdue should get consideration as the number one team in the country. Based on what we've seen, just looking at the early sample, I think Purdue could play with literally anyone in the country, and that includes Gonzaga and UCLA, who, by the way, are going to play tonight late night because it's a 10 o'clock start. Gonzaga and UCLA, game of the year so far in college basketball. And I think it's fair to say that both those teams probably deserve to be right in the top two spots in the national rankings. But I think Purdue is capable of beating either one. What I saw with Purdue over the weekend in beating North Carolina on Saturday and then coming back and coming from behind in a back-to-back situation, which is really tough to do. When you play back-to-back days, You're going to have the effects. You're going to have it in your legs. But here's the thing. It's much tougher to play when you're 10, 12 points behind than if you're 10, 12 points ahead. It just takes a certain energy because you know you have to play defense that much better. You have to get more stops. You have to, you know, offensively execute and cut a little bit better. And so it takes a little more energy, I think, whenever you're playing from behind. Purdue dropped behind against Villanova and then just went on an unbelievable run. When you got a tired basketball team, and even though they play a very deep roster, you know, you still had a lot of basketball in a short period of time. And Purdue hit, I think, 10 or 11 consecutive shots against Villanova. And ended up flipping a game that they were down double digits and ended up taking a double-digit lead. Caleb First, huge. This guy just continues to impress. And I thought Caleb First would be a good college basketball player, but you go into a roster as loaded as Purdue's roster and you jump in and you take on a role that not only is a strong role player, but a guy who steps up and hits huge shots late in the game. I mean, the last couple of minutes, you're sitting there dropping three balls from the corner. What a night for, or what a weekend for Caleb First. What a start to his college career. Jaden Ivey still the stud of the team. And then you've got the bigs inside. I mean, tell me what Purdue is missing. I mean, they've got Thompson out there just drilling threes. They keep getting him open shots. They execute so well offensively and get the shots that they want for the players that they want. They have been terrific. Kudos to Purdue so far. And of course, tonight, as we said, UCLA, Gonzaga, watch that if you're a Boilermaker fan. You can watch it and see exactly how you feel like the Boilermakers stack up. Indiana off to a good start, probably as good as can be expected under Mike Woodson, new coach. Watch them play the other night. Now, yeah, they're not playing great competition, but you want to talk about suffocating defense. Who was it they played Sunday? They almost held them into single digits in the first half. That was just incredible what IU was doing defensively. And it's effort from everybody. It's taking away the penetration. The one thing that they never did, it seemed, last year was to be able to stop the dribble drive. And once your guard gets the edge, gets the shoulder on his defender and can penetrate into the paint, bad things happen for you defensively. And Indiana did that last year because you have to then rotate. You have to trust your rotation. You've got bigs that get out of position, which means you're vulnerable to the putback shot. There's so many bad things that happen when guards are allowed and able to just penetrate past their defender one-on-one. And Indiana was not good at stopping dribble penetration last year. And I think they are much better at it this year. And just the effort they have defensively, to a man, has been really impressive under Mike Woodson so far this year. And I know Dane Fife is a good part of that because we all know how hard Michigan State has played defensively. And that's part of what Dane Fife has brought into the Indiana program, is that defensive intensity and effort that Michigan State is kind of known for. And they've brought it to Bloomington. And yeah, you do bring back a little bit of the Bobby Knight, you know, defensive philosophies and all. But reality is, this is today's generation. They don't know what kind of defense Bobby Knight coached. So what's important now is the effort and the philosophies that are being used with this current team. But very impressive with both Indiana and Purdue, what I saw over the weekend. Because Indiana, you know, if you can lock it down defensively, if you can just shut people down and keep yourself in ball games, they got the win last week over St. John's. They got the win over the weekend. They got a game tonight. They're going to win. For Indiana, it's, I think, as good a start as they could get under Mike Woodson. You got a lot of different players playing. You had a couple of guys that were out of the lineup on Sunday, so a couple of guys had to step up. Christian Lander, to me, he's a new player. He's bigger. He's more physical. He's older. He's more mature. Coming into Indiana the year early when he reclassified was the dumbest thing Indiana ever allowed him to do, and it was the dumbest thing he ever did, because that was a wasted year last year, and all it did was damage confidence, and the kid was not ready to play college basketball, especially at the power conference level. Now you're seeing what a guy that's a highly touted, quote, freshman should look like. He's built up a little more physically. He's a little more confident, a little more mature, totally different player. And I don't know, did you get a chance to see the game Sunday, Caleb? Because to me, the player that really stood out was Christian Lander, because I think, you know, last year he was a question mark. His shooting, very inconsistent. Sometimes he just threw bricks up there. He seemed to be out physical because he just didn't have the maturity in his body. And it looks like he can be more of a contributor, even though a role player, but more of a contributor now. And I think last year, just a big mistake, and it's really showing that it was a big mistake to come out and reclassify and join the team as, what, a 17-year-old?
Yeah, he was 17, and I didn't see Sunday's game, but I did watch the St. John's game late last week, and he had a couple of key minutes there, plus also Jordan Geronimo with some key minutes in that win. So young guys are stepping up, and it seems like they have a lot of depth. Not Purdue-level depth, but they have a lot of depth.
And Jordan Geronimo is one of those guys that's just been really active. I mean, he's, you know, and we talk about that effort and the guys that are showing the effort type plays. Jordan Geronimo is one of those guys. He's going out defending on the perimeter, and he's doing that well when he needs to. And then he's also able to protect around the basket, help in the rebounding. He was kind of a guy, I don't even know if I said his name the entire offseason. But he's been contributing for Indiana as well. 46862, that's the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. We'd love to hear from you on this Tuesday. It's our only show, at least my only show this week. Coming up tomorrow, we have the Doug Gottlieb show that will be in our time slot because we're taking a day off heading into the holiday. And then we'll be off for Thursday, Thanksgiving, and then Friday. We've got tons of live sports coming up, on including the Mastodons playing on Friday at 4:30. They will take on Southeastern Louisiana. I'll be down in Fort Myers for the call of that one. And then plenty of more sports. I'm looking at the calendar, and it's like, how do we fit all these games into our little radio calendar? But we're stuffing it in. If you ever have a question about our schedule, our broadcast schedule, or where the games will be broadcast, you can always go to our website, 1380thefan.com, and check out exactly what our lineup is going to be. That's 1380thefan.com. Quick timeout. When we return, Kevin Bowen joins us. Colts football comes up next on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. We wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. We know a lot of people are going to be hitting the road tomorrow. Make it a safe holiday. It sounds like AAA reporting that it's going to be the most active, busiest travel Thanksgiving holiday in some time. So be careful, be safe, give yourself plenty of time. Don't overrush things and have a very enjoyable holiday weekend. We will be off tomorrow and we will return on Monday with the Sports Rush 4 to 6. Right now we welcome on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis. It is Kevin Bowen. Kevin, how shocked were you? I sat here in almost disbelief with a silly little grin on my face watching that Colts performance on Sunday. Did not expect what we got out of the Colts at Buffalo. Not sure if we've got Kevin. I am hearing nothing, so I don't know if we've got an issue connecting with Kevin Bowen, but hopefully we will get that corrected, and we'll try again, I guess. I sat here in shock watching the Colts put on that performance on Sunday. I thought they had a chance to compete against Buffalo and maybe even win the contest. Did not expect them to go in and dominate from the start. Well, we are not getting anything from Kevin.
Brett, can you hear me?
I just got you. You just popped in. Kevin, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. It's like we're doing some kind of cell phone commercial. Can you hear me now?
Right.
I'm going to try question number three because I don't know if you heard the first two. But basically, I thought the Colts could go into Buffalo and compete. I thought they had a chance to win the game. And I thought they would just win it close if they did everything well. I did not expect to see what we saw Sunday with the Colts completely dominating the Bills almost in all phases of the game.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. I did not expect that at all. You know, I thought the Colts would keep it close. I thought they'd cover the 7-point spread. But, yeah, in no way, shape, or form did I expect that. You know, I think Buffalo's really good. I thought Buffalo would win the Super Bowl at the start of the year, obviously. They've hit a bit of a rough patch here, but I thought it was the finest hour of the Frank Wright, Chris Ballard era. I know a lot of people point to that Kansas City game a couple of years ago in Arrowhead. I thought Sunday was more complete offensively, defensively, and special teams. You factor all of that in. And handling the elements, which, you know, who knows? Come January, there's a lot of outdoor AFC venues. If you can make it there, you know, you could be back in one of those environments. So just really, really impressive, especially the magnitude of that game. You know, that Kansas City game in 2019, early in the season, the Colts had already gotten off to a nice start. It wasn't that big of a game record-wise. This one right here, look at Frank Reich's emotion, and that tells you everything.
You know, you brought up a great point, because I felt like the script for the Colts couldn't have been followed any better, which was to get out to a lead that put pressure on Buffalo to have to pass the football, especially in those conditions. And the Colts came out once again. I don't know what your stats are telling you, Kevin, but my eyeballs keep telling me that the Colts are putting together some really well-designed play calls and drives early in football games. And that early lead, I think, paid big dividends, especially in those weather conditions.
Oh, no, I mean, they've been great early in games, Brad. I think what I was saying to you last week is it's not like they've been that much better in the first quarter than other quarters. If you look at their scoring, I don't have it in front of me. I believe their second quarter and third quarter points scored is a little bit more, actually, than what they've done in the first quarter. I mean, their fourth quarter's not that far behind. They've been really balanced, I guess I should say, across all four quarters, which I know might surprise some people. Again, this is scoring, giving up points. They've been really poor in the fourth quarter, and then have been kind of even in the other quarter. So, yeah, I mean, opening drives, they've been incredible, you know, throughout Frank Reich's tenure, but especially this season. But it has kind of balanced out. I thought it was critical on Sunday, Brett. You got the lead, what was it, 14-0, I believe, and then the weather turned. And I thought when the weather turned, that gave the advantage to Indianapolis. It's kind of funny how the Dome team is built better to play in those conditions than the – you know, Western New York team is built, but that's very true. And I thought once the weather turned, the wind and the rain picked up, frankly, I didn't think there was a chance Buffalo was going to come back in that game, especially when you saw how the late first half sequence played out.
I know Buffalo had an injury in their defensive line. It's their, quote, run stopper. But, man, what the Colts did at the line of scrimmage and what Jonathan Taylor did in carving up that defense was really impressive. You know the entire league took notice to what the Colts did on Sunday.
Certainly, and it's going to be another, you know, I think great challenge this Sunday. I would say Tampa Bay is a little bit healthier with Vita Vea, looks like, back in the lineup. But, yeah, I mean, anytime you rush for, you know, whatever, Taylor had 185. I assume they're over 200 with how many guys got carries and whatnot. You know, Buffalo is kind of a sum of its parts run front seven. They were without star Lotulelei, without Tremaine Edmonds. I thought those were significant losses. And, you know, if you look at it, Brett, the Colts can say – and they have kind of admitted this, they're putting Jonathan Taylor on the field more. If you look at the start, 1-4 start, Jonathan Taylor has been playing about 50% of the snaps. They've won 5 of 6. Jonathan Taylor has been on the field for about 75% of the offensive snaps. That is a huge uptick for a running back. If you look at the last couple of weeks, he's been over 80%. And I know those numbers might, you know, be a little bit hard to quantify, but just to put it in terms that I think fans would understand, the only running back in the NFL that is averaging more than 80% of his team snaps is Najee Harris for the Steelers. Basically, you just don't see running backs play that much. All of a sudden, Taylor's usage is skyrocketing. And I think, you know, honestly, Brett, I assume you guys watched Hard Knocks last Wednesday. There was that great scene in there of Chris Ballard and Scotty Montgomery, the running backs coach, having a chat. I think that was a bit eye-opening. It's not like, you know, there's always those rumors of Ryan Grigson forcing Trent Richardson to, you know, playing time and whatever, and who knows the validity on that. You know, Chris Ballard, you know, anytime the GM says we've got incredible talent and, you know, he needs to be on the field, if you're the first-year position coach, you're going to hear that. And it's Scotty Montgomery that controls playing time at running back, and clearly he's played Taylor a whole lot more.
I want to get your thoughts on this. I brought it up earlier in the show, kind of just a topic to kind of throw out to start a little bit of a thought process. Hard Knocks being there, it's kind of a new experience. I wondered out loud on Twitter even Sunday night, if Hard Knocks brings out a higher level of accountability for the players, if they feel like I'm being scrutinized here, I've got cameras everywhere, if I make mistakes, I might be the centerpiece of the next episode. you know, do you think the players have any consciousness of how important it is to perform well when you're under a national spotlight like that?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, Brett. I don't think that's necessarily the case, though. I mean, I guess we'll find out at some point. I guess the Colts would have to lose to find out at some point, but we'll see how the episodes react after a loss. I don't think you're getting a whole lot of individual roasting. At the end of the day, the Colts have editorial control over what gets put out there. So I think you got to remember that. Obviously, we saw a whole lot of Carson Wentz and Darius Leonard kind of home life stuff. So I don't think you're going to see this just straight blasting of, you know, players and things like that. Maybe I'm wrong. Part of me is like, does it really need to take national cameras to come into your building to have accountability? And I know that word has been used often in this regime, and I think at times it's lacked in this regime. I just think in general, you'd like to think a sense of urgency of knowing full well what's at stake in terms of, you know, the backs are squarely against the wall, and you would just like to think that kind of uptick has created a little bit more of that self-accountability.
Well, and that's exactly, too, one of the points, I guess, is maybe not even individual accountability, but accountability for the team, because they don't want to be a story that goes to the nation that's, look at the Colts' talent, look at their flop. You know, the team wants to succeed because they want this to be a feel-good story and go to the nation as, look at the success the Colts are having. And I don't know, it could be very subliminal somewhat, but I just feel there has to be some impact of the presence because, I mean, even on the sideline, you see the cameras moving around on the sideline. They've got very, very free access to everything happening. I do want to, though, get on to a couple of other points. One of the concerns I had going into Sunday was the Colts' ability to defend the deep level of the field with their safeties. And I thought Matt Eberflus and the Colts safeties were terrific. I mean, I thought both safeties played exceptionally well, and that was one of the keys, too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I thought that would be the difference in the game, Brett. That's why I picked Buffalo. I felt like the Colts had that advantage, again, in the run game, like we talked about. I thought they had a definite advantage against the Bills' offensive line. They were shuffling musical chairs about three spots. But then if you look at the safety issue, that's where I thought you'd be exposed. But nothing off script from Josh Allen. Disguise things pre-snap really well. And I thought George Odom played, you know, he was tremendous. Looking back on the Chiefs game a few years ago, that great win, he was outstanding. And I think it'll be interesting now, you know, if Kari Wolf can get back this week off the IR list, you know, I would roll with Odom next to Willis. Andrew Sandejo had been the guy when Willis was healthy and Julian Blackman tore his Achilles back in kind of late October. I'd like to see Odom out there, but it'll be interesting to see how the Colts handle that.
Coming up, it is Tampa Bay this week. A short week for the Buccaneers. I think that plays into the Colts' favor, but what do you see this game coming down to Sunday?
Yeah, you know, we talked a little bit about it earlier. I think it's a different run game challenge. I just think Tampa's a little bit more stout up front. You know, Frank Reich had some glowing remarks for Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, as a run defender, you know, coach. And at the same time, they blitz at a really high level. And I think if there's kind of one area passing offense-wise where the Colts have struggled, and again, this is on multiple units, it has been how they've handled opposing blitzes. So, you know, your O-line handling that, obviously Carson finding hot reads, all of that, you know, wideouts acknowledging it, tight ends acknowledging all those things. And then on the flip, obviously Brady. You know, as much as you fool Josh Allen, I don't think you're fooling Tom Brady. I don't know if you watched the end of the game last night, I'm one of the five Notre Dame basketball fans that are out there, Brett. So I was up until the 11:30 tip against St. Mary's. Talk about a heartbreaking loss. Anyway, I was watching the end of the Monday night game, and Brady in that postgame field interview with Lisa Salters, I mean, he mentioned the Colts and the challenge this Sunday and taking it on the road several times. I mean, Brady knows full well, you know, what the challenge is and just now doing it on the road. So, yes, the short week I think should help the Colts, but I also think you're going to get a pretty locked in opposing quarterback on Sunday.
Well, you've got a guy who obviously has some memories that haunt him a little bit in that building. He would love to be able to come into Indianapolis and maybe do some damage. But, you know, another quick thing about the Colts' health, Xavier Rhodes is back on the field. I look at Mike Evans as one of the keys to this game, because I certainly you don't want him matched up against Rodgers. I'm not sure if it's a great matchup against Yasin because of Evans' size. How do the Colts defend Evans on the outside?
Yeah, I think that's going to be key. You know, obviously, him and 50-50 balls is such a dangerous, dangerous situation. Now, he did get a little banged up late last night, so I'll be curious to kind of watch that as the week progresses. I also think Tampa Bay, their depth at receiver, I think Scotty Miller came off the IR list today. I know Antonio Brown's still very iffy, but still, I think is something to keep an eye on. And how does that test the Colts? You know, I think if there's an individual worry, I mean, the Colts did so much right on Sunday. But, you know, Buffalo, when the weather was good, they picked on Xavier Rhodes like it was me out there playing corner. You know Tampa is going to try and do that. So Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, you know, Tyler Johnson, obviously their tight ends with Gronk and Cameron Brate. I'll be very interested to see how the Colts handle that.
It'll be fun to see coming up Sunday, Colts hosting Tampa Bay. Kevin, always appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving. Wonderful holiday. We'll talk to you again.
I appreciate that, Brett. Same to you guys. Have a good one.
Yep, that Kevin Bowen joining us from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. He joins us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline.
Podcasts by Federated Media.